I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at DiageoBarAcademy.com. Well, hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Monday, November 29th, 2021. This is our 310th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding chef who is based in Peru, and he has a new cookbook out, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to go to the source. Find deeper meaning in how and why we do things and the stories behind them by returning to their roots and learning about their origin, history, and culture. We can discover so much from going back to the beginnings, gaining invaluable insights and inspiration. So let's seek knowledge from the past as it will help shape the future. That's my tip today. Okay, I'm really thrilled to have my guest joining me. It is Virgilio Martinez. He is the chef and owner of Central in Lima, Peru, and he's the author of a new cookbook, The Latin American Cookbook by Fiden. After cooking in prestigious restaurants around the world, Virgilio returned to Peru in 2009 and he opened Central. Since 2013, Central has appeared on the world's 50 best list and has been named the number one restaurant in Latin America multiple times. Virgilio co-founded Matter Iniciativa, which documents Latin Americans' indigenous foods. In 2018, he opened the acclaimed Mill in the Andes above the terraces of Moray, and he's featured on Netflix Chef's Table and the author of Central, his chef monograph published by Fiden as well. So hi, Virgilio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for such a great introduction about
My pleasure. I could go on and on. You've accomplished a lot. But I'm thrilled to be chatting with you. There's so much to talk about between your
for
restaurant
sure. Yes.
And book. So I always start out with my guests to find out a little more about their background. So do you want to take us back a little bit to growing up and what inspired you to become a chef?
Yeah. In the beginning, I wanted to be a pro skateboarder. So that's one of the main reasons I started to travel. And I started as an explorer, I was going to different places, different countries, to perform my thing, and that was I think the beginning of trying to do something abroad, which in the end had a lot to do with cooking, because every time I was going out traveling, I was supposed to get a job, and in those days, getting a job as a cook was very easy. That was the beginning of something that it happened because I just needed the work. But then it transformed actually into a real passion and commitment, as the way it is. So after a while, I decided to go to school. Culinary school, and then I moved to different restaurants. I went to the Ritz in London, a few other restaurants in London, New York. I went to Lutes, this French classic restaurant, which I had this amazing experiences. And then I went to Southeast Asia, Singapore. I went to Spain. I spent some time in Madrid. I did some openings for a very well-known restaurant, Astrid y Gaston. And then I decided, after all these trips, to go back to my roots, as you were saying, in the beginning, it's very important to get back your identity and understand more, where you're coming from. So I went back to Peru, and I just traveled for a year, and I got to know way better, the Andes, the Cordillera de los Andes, the Amazon, our Pacific coast. So then I decided to open a place which is now my place, my base, which is Central.
Yes, which I was very fortunate to visit back in 2016 on my trip to Peru, and it was phenomenal. Talk a little bit about the concept of Central, because I mean, for me in dining there, it was really one of the most extraordinary, unique meals I've ever had. I mean, so I learned, and I feel like it's not just a dining experience. There's an education component too, with all the ingredients you're using.
Yeah, we were clearly ambitious enough to try to do something very different, to what we were seeing in Lima. I'm talking about 15 years ago, and we decided to go and do experiences and basically, yeah, menus where you get to taste and feel in many ways different ecosystems or ecoregions of Peru. So this is, we're called, it's probably a cliche thing, the land of biodiversity. And I just wanted to show this, how diverse we are in terms of ingredients, in terms of geography, landscapes. So that was the beginning of an idea, which is now creating unique and meaningful experiences where you get this sense of place, you get a bit of our culture, different cultures, because there is no one Peruvian cuisine. And then it happens a lot of innovation, and it happens a lot of things that probably you've never experienced, and that's what makes Central unique.
Yeah, absolutely. It's extremely unique and special. And also, I mean, the hospitality that at your restaurant and just overall in Peru, I was blown away by how wonderful the culture is.
Well, it's quite difficult because there's so many messages in the restaurant that we actually need very good people that really is very consistent and passionate about doing things. And every single service for us is important. Every single table, different things that are happening, we actually want to communicate and make the people special, and even more nowadays, whenever you come to a restaurant, you want to experience something way different. And even when you take a decision to go to a restaurant, it's becoming a quite a strong decision. I'm talking about the fine dining experiences, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I think where people are spending their time and their money and their, it's different now. Let me ask you my question for my last guest. On episode 309, I had on Lori Woolover. She's a writer and editor and the former lieutenant to the late author, TV host, and producer Anthony Bourdain. Her books include Appetite's a Cookbook, World Travel, an Irreverent Guide with Anthony Bourdain and Bourdain, the Definitive Oral Biography. So Lori wants to know, what's the impact and pressure of being so high up on the world's 50 best list? Do you think your guests come in expecting something different or extraordinary because of the list? How much are your guest populations informed by the list or versus people who are just coming in because they know you're good? And you're currently number four on the list, which is incredible. So, yeah.
It's a very common question because we've of course this list and or any kind of list of let's say Michelin guide, we don't have any Michelin guide here, so this list, the 50 best, has a very good impact to attract people. But that was like long time ago, I guess like 7 years ago. When we just entered to the list, it was shocking for Peru, actually, for the restaurant. We used to be a small restaurant for locals, and now we're doing like the restaurant became like way bigger. More people is working in the restaurant. We serve actually less people than before, and people is coming more for the experience. The level of expectations are way higher, but this is just not because of being on that position in the list. Because this is there's so many interpretations about this. It's too difficult to know, because you mentioned that Chef's Table, for instance, at one point everybody were seeing that episode and they were coming and they wanted to have what they've seen in the episode, what they watched, and that was that was difficult to please, you know, all people with all these different views. And and nowadays social media is such an impressive and surprisingly good way to communicate what we do. So we have lots of people engaged to what we do, and then that's the list. We believe that being the list is of course the result of the work that we do. So we've never think that because of the list we should be changing or working in a different way. We've been always committed to the excellence and just to be honest to what we love to do and what is our passion. So yeah, but the list of course is as a promotion is just great. But then many things that we do, they actually nowadays they have a great impact on make the people aware of our work, which is like maybe a central book. Or just the book we did about Latin America. So this very little initiative that we start to do, of course, having this research and interpretation center called MATER also plays a big role. Also that we've opened a restaurant in the mountains in Cusco. So all these kind of things that we do make our ecosystem healthier and more, I don't know, in a way like a more powerful for us to be confident and to promote more our ideas and being able to go deeper into our roots and our cuisine and our style in the end.
Yes, that all makes sense, and yes, everyone gets information and inspiration from so many places that and the things you're working on. And let's talk about the book, because I have it here. It's beautiful. Nice. I mean the cover, the red, and it's so bright and it's like stands out now on my bookshelf, which I love. and the book is, I mean, it's you have over you have 600 recipes. Talk a little about the inspiration or why you decided to do this Latin American cookbook and what the process was like in putting it together, because it's really quite something. It's amazing.
Yeah, we've been doing things very related to Peruvian biodiversity. So let's say we've been doing things from the coast to the Andes and the Amazon. So probably like South America, Latin America, we're having quite similar geographies, and actually the cultures are different, countries are different. We're covering 22 countries, but what made us do this huge challenge was that we wanted to know more about Latin America. So we've been exploring Peru, as I was mentioning, a lot. We go to Cusco, we go to different places in the mountains, we go to different places in the jungle. But then we wanted to know more about, you know, what about the tropical forest in Central America? What about the Amazon of the Brazilian Amazon? What about the south of Chile? What about Argentina? So what about these places, Ecuador, Bolivia, that we share in some cases the same languages. We share some recipes. So we wanted to know more. So we did it with a Mater Iniciativa, with the research center. Like, okay, let's just try to see beyond Peru. Let's try to go to be more South American, more Latin American. So that was one of the main things, which was it was all about curiosity. And again, it's like more of the ideas that we have to build a community.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing. And you worked with Nicholas Gill, who I'm friendly with in New York, collaborated with him writing the book. What was the process like, and how did you guys go about it or decide what recipes to include?
Yeah, Nicholas is amazing because he's a very good friend of us, and he's been working with us since Central book, and he's the right guy who he's been to all the places, and he also takes amazing photos, and he's very like curious about very little details that not many people do. So yeah, we're exchanging recipes, we're exchanging ideas. We've been chatting, talking a lot about YouTube videos, Latin American restaurants, Latin American recipes, and stuff like this. So he was a very important part for us for the book, because he was the one who was helping us to also, in a way, wanna give sense to everything we do. So one of the main things was about like just not going country by country. So let's just not put 22 countries and then we develop the recipes. So it was about like why not we start from the ingredients, start from the preparations, and then we start to develop the countries. So that was part of most of the Nicholas ideas, and we're like very willing to and open minded to listen to different people. I'm talking about different historians, ecologists, farmers, ceramics local artists, people from the science. So it was a whole collaboration. I'm quite, still surprised in a good way how when you email the Latin community or any chef from, let's say, Chile, how easy is to get to the real knowledge, because you very wise people, very intelligent people, they wanna share with you their recipes, their things. And it happened to most of the countries that we managed to get to good sources, to see good recipes, and just not good recipes, meaningful recipes that are good for the now, which is like we do traditional cuisine from Latin America, yes, but then we need to put some other factors which are important, like if these recipes will be able to be cooked somewhere in Asia, or it made us also reflect how many ingredients are nowadays in the world coming from Latin America. So I can name you like from cacao, quinoa, grains, seeds, coffee, tomatoes, potatoes, vegetable roots, and there's so much things that that we know that at this point people is eating Latin American food without noticing.
Yeah, and you have, I mean, you have a wonderful glossary in the book, and also I love that you have the prep time and the cooking time on it, because it's, you know, I don't know, I opened it up and I was, you know, going through the recipes, and it could be very intimidating. There's 600 recipes in here, but it feels very approachable, actually, for people who maybe aren't professional chefs, but to cook out of your book, I think you made it very user-friendly.
So. Yes, that's the right word. It has to be this way. It has to be this book that you put in your kitchen and you start to cook. And then in the intro, I think I mentioned something about if you don't find something, any ingredient, just go to a Latin American mode of improvisation and be creative. Because we are not such a... Our food is not that attached to the recipe. It doesn't mean that the recipes don't work. I mean, the recipes are perfect. But if you don't find something, it could be substituted by something else. And then there's one thing that we're not that familiar with the home cooking. Of course, I cook at home, but we are most of our time in a professional kitchen. So we gotta think, you know, as somebody in any part of the world is trying to do a buffet of or a party of Latin American cuisine. So that book, I think, is great to get these recipes, easy recipes, easy preparations, and actually very interesting ingredients.
Yeah. Do you have any favorites, or a recipe you'd say is for someone the first one to try?
Well, I would say the empanadas for me. Empanadas is something that you find from Chile to Mexico, and I like the way they are so versatile that there's not just one way of doing empanadas. Is like there are many ways because there are many fillings. So, and it's so simple because you can have it in your hands, and it's so comfort.
Yes, eating with your hands is something more delicious about that experience.
Oh yeah, I think it's the thing now. You know.
Yeah, it's good. So. What about we can't not mention your wife, Chef Pia Leon, because you work with her. I know you're working with her at Central, and she has, do you pronounce it? Is it Cojole?
Coye, yeah.
Coye.
Yeah, it's even difficult to mention in Spanish, so no worries about
Yeah, I'm sorry. I try my best on pronunciation, but it's not, I apologize in advance.
No worries, because it's a Quechua word, so it's not even Spanish. So it's even difficult for people from Lima, from South America, to pronounce Coye as Coye. The way it is. So yeah, we've been working together since the beginning of Central. She was one of the chefs in the restaurant, and little by little she started to grow as a chef. And then after about 8 years, now she's the head chef of Central. Of course, she has Coye, but she's in charge of Central, as we are both direct in Central, but she has her own place because after 10 years of working in Central, she was looking for probably kind of her voice in the kitchen, we are also quite amazed about the response of the people that even it's becoming, you know, such a great competition for Central. So it's so funny. That, yeah, sometimes we get people like they don't know where to go, like or if they go to Central or they go to Coyen. Some people they go to both, but some people of course they just want to go to one place. Both places are different, Central and Coyen. Coyen is PS food, and Central has been here more time, and it probably has more structural things. But yeah, she's quite happy, and she's enjoying having both concepts. In you know, we have Coyen and Central in the same place, which is called the whole center used to be a cultural house, which is called Casa Tupac. And then we are having this restaurant in Cusco in the Andes, so which is called Mil. So we are mostly like focused on these three things.
That's amazing. I need to come back.
Oh, please do.
Need to come back. Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. And how long ago was that? How long ago did you?
I was there in 2016. So you've opened the other restaurants after that.
So because we changed locations. Yeah, that's you went to the old Central.
I mean, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we moved from Miraflores district to Barranco district. Because we had like a way bigger space, and the thing is that the evolution of Central has always been great. So we had to create a new system and a new kitchen, and that's why it all starts. Because the place where we moved was such a big place. It is huge, so that's why we started to think about why not, like Pia, you have a Pia had her chance to create her own restaurant, and then we even had a chance to do a cocktail area where part of the philosophy of Central, where you every single course that you are having is one ecosystem. We're doing the same with the drinks, and we have a spot which is called Mayo in the same house. So you have this sense of place in the liquid area.
Oh, amazing! I was the other day. I looked back at my photos from my trip, and I wish I had a better camera in 2016. I know, I'm serious. I was scrolling through. I'm like, okay, these are not as good of food pictures as I take now. But I mean, it reminded me of all your different dishes and preparations and so many little flowers. And just, I mean, the presentation was so special. And then, I remember we went in the kitchen and got the whole tour upstairs. And so I'm going to have to come back.
Sure. Now we have only one floor. Yeah, we used to have two floors. Now we have only one floor, and the place is bigger. So we have but still we haven't changed much. It's like when I'm talking about the evolution of Central, it's been about like new findings of ingredients because of Mater Iniciativa, and of course change the menus and improve the level of hospitality.
Yeah. Well. You don't have to, I'm due. I mean, I would love to get back there. And as I mentioned earlier, the hospitality of your country and just of you and your whole team was just phenomenal.
I think.
Yeah. it made me feel very special. Just,
very nice people you can find over here in Peru.
Yeah, very. So, I mean, if anyone hasn't been there, like, really go. It's phenomenal. Okay, so let's take a little break and we'll come back. We'll play my speed round game, talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience this week and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Diageo Bar Academy has new master classes just for you, including how to create the ultimate seasonal menu, how to integrate low and no ABV cocktails on your menu, and how to transform your outdoor dining space during colder months. Register for upcoming events or watch these can't-miss masterclasses on demand by visiting diageobaracademy.com. Whether you are a bartender, owner, or operator, or completely new to the industry, Diageo Bar Academy has easy-to-access resources to help you learn new skills or stay in the loop with all the latest industry trends. Visit diageobaracademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O baracademy.com. Become a member and sign up for the newsletter today. It's completely free, and you will be amazed at all they have to offer. That's D-I-A-G-E-O baracademy.com. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Virgilio Martinez. He's the chef and owner of Central in Lima, Peru. And he's also the author of a new book, The Latin American Cookbook. And so, Virgilio, it's time for my speed round game. What this is I'm going to name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. So I give you a choice. You ready?
Yeah. Of course.
Okay, here we go. Eat in at home or eat out at a restaurant?
At home.
Indoor dining or al fresco dining?
Al fresco.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Mocktail.
Cool. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Large plate.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Okay, a few more. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive.
All right, so many to choose from, but how about Chilean hot dog or Bolivian schnitzel topped with a fried egg?
The Chilean hot dog.
I saw a photo of that and I was like, that looks delicious.
It is delicious. Yeah,
I'm sure. Okay, yeah. Machu Picchu or Huanu Picchu?
Machu Picchu, of course.
I did both, but I climbed Huanu Picchu, so I'm like,
really?
Yeah, I did when I went, which is why afterward I went to Cusco and I had a hard time walking around Cusco with like the little steps everywhere because my legs were so sore.
So, wow. Well, the thing is, because of the altitude, you get this you feel like weird, this lack of oxygen, and then walking is difficult. But you know, one of the best things that if we can name a few positive stuff going on at the moment, because there's not much tourism. Going to Machu Picchu now is priceless because you don't see as many people as before, and you get space only for you. This is right. Very mystical and very, there is very quite like a spiritual experience.
Yes, I know somebody. I saw somebody post pictures that they went back this last year, and with that same idea. And you're right. It's magical. I'm so glad I was able to experience it. And Cusco is a gorgeous city too. So pretty. So, sure. Okay. Two more. I've got cheese plate or dessert.
Cheese plate.
And Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Lima.
Lima. So sorry.
Lima. Yeah. No, you have to pick Lima. Yeah. I mean, with no, that Lima, choice,
Lima is my place. I get to travel a lot, and probably I have to say, like, Lima is probably not the most beautiful city, and sometimes it's too chaotic, it's too big. I'm staying in a little place, which is Barranco, which is nice, but you know, I think Lima for me is just beautiful because I see people from Lima, and I get to see locals, you know, enjoying, and we are so welcome to the tourism. So
yes,
and there Lima is where my restaurant is. So I wouldn't move to another place.
Yes, it's a wonderful city, and I would, if with that choice, I would choose that too. Why not Lima all the way? Okay, so for industry news, I picked out an article that was in Food & Wine magazine entitled, "Another World's Best Restaurant is Dropping Most Meat from the Menu." Denmark's Geranium, which came in second on last month's World's 50 Best Restaurant list, is refocusing on plant-focused and pescatarian dishes. And this was by Mike Pomerantz. I thought this would be interesting to talk about with you, being that you're World's 50 Best List restaurant as well, and just this sort of trend that's happening. 11 Madison Park, which, spoiler alert, that's going to be my solo dining experience this week because I went, and they recently went all plant-based. And so this is Geranium in Denmark is now, they're not going all plant-based, they're going to have seafood, but it's a switch for them, and they were number two on the World's 50 Best list that just came out. So I don't know, what's your take on this? Do you have a take on this?
Yeah, we've been thinking about this, because of course, whenever you see like a very important restaurant as 11 Madison is doing this plant-based menus, and the whole system may change for them, and they are having a huge impact in the world of the fine dining. We start to think ourselves like what's our take on this, and we're happy with what we do. We consider that we've been eating meat here for years, and fish, and we've been also agriculture here was also depending on animals, and because we are in a way what we do is an interpretation and manifestation of what's the people consuming in Peru and what's going on. Our take is like we continue with our system of going to different altitudes of Peru. And whenever we see fish, meat, vegetables, we just go on with that. So we're not planning to change anything to plant-based. I eat meat. I love fish. There's plenty of it here, but of course, because of ecology, we gotta be coherent with what we do, and we actually we are we're doing what people, and we're defending what people is consuming, and we're protecting that. So part of our values, whenever we do our menus, are there, and then about vegetables, like we have a four menus, yeah, and we do two menus that we do in a large and shorter version, and then we have another menu which is all vegetables. So for whoever wants to come to Central and they just don't want to consume any fish or meat, we have a great amount of vegetables, because as I would say, like Peru has had an amazing agriculture here, and different systems of create and to get different seeds. And imagine this is the country of the 4,000 varieties of potatoes and vegetable roots, and the origin of the tomatoes. And whenever you go, you see people like growing quinoa and different Andean grains. So I think we are in that way we're like blessed to have this great amount of vegetables, and then that's why we have this proposal. As a message, because we understand that being in our position, you become part of a voice that is relevant for next generations or just for the industry. We believe that we are defending the way we appreciate food.
Yeah, I mean that all makes sense to me. I was going to ask how many people, what's it on average, how many people are getting your vegetable menu or opt for that?
About 15%.
Okay. That's cool. Which is,
it's a lot. It used to be like,
oh, it's good you have that as an option. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with other top Michelin fine dining restaurants if people continue with this trend. I actually lucky to dine at Geranium when I was in Copenhagen back in 2017, and I went for lunch, and it was fantastic. I mean, I remember being a very long tasting menu. But it was a beautiful restaurant and really.
Were they serving meat in those days, right?
Yes, they did have meat, but I don't remember it. I feel like it was more of it was a long tasting menu and a lot of small plates, and I don't think it was very meat heavy at all. Like towards the end, there was like one or two meat courses. So I think, you know, from my memory. I think it was a lot of vegetables and seafood as well. So, we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I've been there with Pia like 4 years ago, and I had this great experience. And I remember, it was a long tasting menu. We did enjoy. Lots of the what they have as a what technique wise is very good, and the produce they use is they're just amazing. Rasmus is the chef, and if they are doing this thing, I think it's good that actually more restaurants are looking after not just pleasing the people that goes to the restaurant, also giving an example that you can do a few changes if you want to preserve things.
Yes, true. I agree. I'm glad you got to experience too. And so let me segue into my solo dining experience this week, because I, in the name of research, I decided to go to 11 Madison Park and take myself for a nice solo dinner. So
really?
Here's the rundown of my solo dining experience. The location, 11 Madison Park at 24th Street in New York City. The concept, a New York restaurant which has received 4 stars from the New York Times, 3 Michelin stars, and has been ranked number 1 on the world's 50 best list. And they are now doing an all plant-based tasting menu. The chef and owner is Daniel Hume. Why did I go? Well, as I said, I've a little research here, and I've had been to EMP back not in several years, always stellar experience. And I really want to try this new vegan menu, which is under the critical eye right now. It started about 3 months ago, and I said I'm gonna go and check this out. So my experience, I made a reservation for 1 on Talk. And actually, I remember when they first opened up this new menu, there weren't reservations for 1, and something they added in. So it was nice to see they're welcoming solo diners for the full dining experience. Because, I do find that sometimes when I'm going to make reservations, it's just not available. But it was available at Central, I'll say that. So I made a reservation, 5:30 early reservation. I arrived. They were just getting ready to start service. They brought me to the bar for a little bit. I ordered a soft cocktail that they took over with me to my table. I was seated in the back room. There's like kind of two sections of the restaurant. It's gorgeous flower arrangement nearby, a centerpiece. And I was sitting on the banquette, kind of watching the flow of the dining room. It was kind of like a ballet. It's like theater, just watching service. Very attentive, wonderful, warm service. Before dessert, I was brought into the kitchen where I had a cider drink and talked to the manager. Unfortunately, Chef Hume wasn't there that night, so I didn't get to see him, but I felt really well taken care of and I had a really lovely time. So what did I get? So I ordered a grapefruit soft cocktail as my little mocktail for the evening. And then it's had a 10-course tasting menu that included the dessert. And that's the only option they have. It's just one set menu. And I got a macchiato with oat milk at the end. My take, it was wonderful. It was really special. I would say I had some favorite dishes of it's all seasonal vegetables and very unique. I think some of my favorites, there were a few mushroom dishes at the beginning. There was one mushroom tart with truffles that was just divine. There was a tandoori with squash and sumac that I loved. And I realized afterward looking at other tables that the portion they gave me was like the same portion they were giving to like a table of four. So sometimes when you're dining by yourself, you get extra because it's like a dish they can only do like it's like one per table. There was also a celery root with Swiss chard and chili that kind of put together and ate like a taco. It's delicious. And then dessert, there was a grape with it was called grape with coconut and kulfi, which was kind of like a sphere-shaped sorbet. And there was this delicious sesame chocolate pretzel at the end. And they sent me home with their seasonal granola. So it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. The ambiance. So the dining room there, it's grand, it's epic. It's got soaring ceilings and floor-to-ceiling windows that face the park. It's elegant, minimalistic. And in the kitchen, it's a very quiet, spacious kitchen. It's almost like seeing the chefs at work. It's sort of, it's kind of magical to see. I always love seeing kitchens. So perfect for, I'd say, a special occasion or for me, a Tuesday. Interesting tidbit. In 2019, Chef Hume split from his longtime business partner, Will Gadara, who previously ran EMP's front of the house. And during the pandemic, EMP kept a small team. They partnered with the nonprofit Rethink Food. They prepared close to a million meals for those experiencing food insecurity in New York. And this led Chef Hume to change his business model. And now every dinner purchased at EMP provides 5 meals to food insecure New Yorkers, which are delivered through the 11 Madison truck. So it's a great initiative that they're doing. Personal fun fact, if you go back to episode 220 of my show in July 2019, I did a show on Rethink. At the time, it was with their chief strategic officer and policy director, Evelyn Kim. And I'm glad I got to do that, talk a little about what they were doing. I'll have to have them back on, talk about what they're doing now. The cost of this meal, okay, this is a splurge, I understand. It was $365 plus $22 for the drinks I had there, and that's including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, of course, but I will definitely wait some time before another season and just also because it was a splurge, can't splurge all the time. The website is 11madisonpark.com and the Instagram is at 11madisonpark. There you go. Virgilio, have you been to EMP? I'm guessing yes.
Yes. I haven't tried this new menu. I haven't tried this new EMP. But I know that Daniel from a long time ago, he actually came to Central about 7 years ago. And I've been following his work. I remember, of course, Will Guidara. And mm-hmm. because the hospitality service that I had was just beautiful. As you were saying, the floor, the dining room was spectacular. The way the waiters and the people, the servers were moving, and it was like ballet. Yeah, actually, yeah, it was impressive. And I had these iconic dishes that they had at this time, that like the duck and some others. So I'll be back for sure next year. I'll be going to New York by January. So I might be able to get a table, because since they kind of changed the concept, they must be extremely busy and with lots of success.
Yes.
Yes.
I feel you can get a table.
Yeah. I'm trying to pretend I'm not getting a table, just in case Daniel is listening to me. he will call me. He will get me a table as soon as possible. Yeah. Anyway, well, I'm so willing to see, because of course I've always believed that let's just think in this way, because when we were doing all this vegetarian menu or even a vegan menu, which is not part of the main tasty menu here, which is the Alturas menu or the Mundo Mater menu, when we were doing the vegetarian menu, we're thinking about we're just asking ourselves about how many textures you can get from a vegetable, and how many flavors and taste using different techniques. For instance, ones which is now very trendy is still talking about fermentation, and fermentation that happened from Korea to China to Peru. You talk about wine, you talk about fermentation. So how easy or difficult could be change vegetables? And that whenever people think that a vegetarian menu is boring or is not, it will not impress you because there is no meat or fish, they must be wrong, because of course vegetables are amazing, and it's actually, and it's proved that we gotta eat more vegetables, and this is a fact, right? For me, it will be I do kind of the same stuff I do, but I go by myself, of course in this case with Pia, but when I'm by myself, I go and check, and I analyze, and I try to get as much inspiration as possible. So, I'm just can't wait to go back to 11 Madison to try this menu.
I've always found dining, my solo dining experiences are really wonderful at these high-end, fine dining tasting menu restaurants, because it's there's so much happening. It's very interactive. There's a lot of dishes and it's like a dance with the service. And sure. And you can really focus on the food and take it all in. So I recommend it to people all the time. And because most people probably don't think that way, like to go to a fine dining restaurant by themselves, but
I'm mostly like nowadays like getting people tables of two and one, right? And in Central we don't do more than a table of four.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is for some people is different. It's difficult to take, but just because there's quite like this kind of different information to process, and which in some cases we get a bit I don't know how to say into the concept, into the idea, so the best way is whenever you have like less people in the table. So we don't want to do big tables because whenever you have a big table, you lose the contact with the restaurant, loses the contact with the people. And I know, of course, some other restaurants, they can do tables of 10, 15, 20. That's fine. That's great. Because in this case, you are celebrating probably the company and your friends and family, whatever. But sometimes when you go to some specific restaurants, I would prefer to do like a two people in one table, even three or four, and I just not. I mean, like, I'm just not saying that it has to be this way for everybody. It's just like it's just happening in Central for us. It works very well, and because we only serve like only 30 people in the service, and probably you see like 40 cooks. And we want that level of communication, and the kitchen is really open. So you get to see, you know, how the people is serving you and how many people is working on your preparation. And this is quite beautiful because we're talking about, in the end, about the all-time criticized fine dining, right? But the fine dining is changing, and it's becoming more human, more like about being nice and showing that what we do is it has a meaning, and we do it because we love we're proud of being part of these kinds of restaurants, and then, you know, the experience. You know, I used to believe, and I used to create experience only for 3 hours or 2 hours or something, which is a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
But after this COVID situation, we're getting reservations and people that they want to stay longer.
And interesting.
Yeah, and then we have this level of communication where you ask the people how are we going, like if you want to go like slower or you want to do more courses, so we can adapt more things to the experience. So you end up maybe you are coming for 11 courses, but you are having 18 or 20. It depends on your time, on the way you are satisfied, and so many other factors that you can only find in the same during the same experience. So yeah. If we get the people like I could say like, okay, I spent 5 hours in the restaurant. Oh, that's so boring. Like, you know, 5 hours, that's a lot. But what happened if I tell you like, okay, you know, I spent 5 hours in a restaurant. I was by myself and I had an amazing time. So why not change this idea of the fine dining that is not about the protocol, it's not about being perfect all the time. You know, it has to be, of course, a professional. It has to be close. You know, it has to be more human. It has to be, and you know, filled with different values that are good for us. And I truly believe that, you know, a restaurant, Central, or any other restaurant that represent a country, an area, a region, has to have this kind of a connection, and then has to be in a way a manifestation of what is happening in our society. So whatever right. is happening, you know, in our environment, whatever it is happening in the restaurant. I don't know, somehow it is working this way.
Wow, that's wonderful. And yes, all of the above. So before we end the show, I have to ask you the final question. My next guests are Mickey Baxt and Steve Palmer. They're the co-founders of Ben's Friends, which is a national support group for people in the hospitality industry struggling with addiction. They're both veterans in the restaurant industry. So Virgilio, I wanted to see if you could ask a question for Mickey and Steve.
Well, yeah. My question will be like, if they know what this guy Sean Brock is doing.
Yeah, I know Sean Brock.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's he has a whole area to help people with emotional issues, and I'd love to know what do they think about that in a restaurant, because it's quite repetitive to see people that is not doing well in restaurants, and not only in restaurants, in many other fields. And then the addictions are coming in many other ways. But yeah, my question will be like, what do they think about Shamrock's place, and if it is necessary to have it in all kind of restaurants?
Okay, I will find out.
Please do.
I'm pretty sure they do. I mean, I'm pretty sure they know Sean. Sean just opened his new place, what, Audrey, down in Nashville. Looking forward to trying that. So, but yeah, I'm excited to talk with them. It's definitely something, another thing, hate to say a trend, but people are talking more about this in the industry, and I think that's a good thing. So, that's the show. I greatly appreciate your time and joining me today, and loved our conversation, and congratulations on all your success and the book and your restaurants. You're amazing. And when you come to New York, maybe we can meet up and grab a meal together.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Yeah. I'll be going back to, I'll be cooking in Atomix, in January.
Oh, Atomix is amazing.
Yeah, I love JP. I love the place, and I don't know if I'm saying this before it's announced. Anyway, I already did, but thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's been great to talking to you, and thank you for giving me this space to talk about Central, Latin America, Peru, the book, my wife, and so other things. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're all fabulous things. So much continued success.
Well, thank you.
My guest today has been Virgilio Martinez. He's the chef and owner of Central in Lima, Peru, which is currently number 4 in the world's 50 best restaurants list. And he's the author of a new book, The Latin American Cookbook, which is published by Fiden. His website is centralrestaurante.com, and you can follow him at Virgilio Central and at Central Rest. And you can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry, and my websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. And all of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. And also note that you can get Virgilio's book wherever you can get books. And you can check out, you can go to Fiden.com also to learn more. Thanks to my engineer today, Armin, and thanks again to Virgilio, and thanks to Roland and Jill for their help, and Andrea as well for helping set this up. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bayer, and guess what? This is actually my last show of 2021, but don't worry, I'll be back after the new year. So have a wonderful holiday season, stay safe and well, and thank you, as always, for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.